Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org.
Inflation is relative.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. There's some concern about inflation rates going up in this country, but how about a little perspective? The U.S. inflation rate is 3-4%. Zimbabwe gave an update this morning on its inflation rate. It's 100,000%, and that's lowballing it. Zimbabwe's inflation is by far the highest in the world. Number two is Iraq, with inflation rates of 60%. The overseas stock markets have had a pretty good day. Let's see where Wall Street's picking it up. So far, the Dow has added 63 points in early trading to 12,490. The NASDAQ has gained 22 already to 2349. And the S&P 500 is up 5 to 1365. In Japan today, stocks finish almost 3% higher. The rest of Asia and Europe have seen gains of about 1% or more. And oil is holding at around $100 a barrel again this morning. When it comes to flying, there are few people as bold as Richard Branson. Between his personal exploits and his Virgin Airlines, he's no doubt a pioneer of the skies. Today we learn more about Branson's next frontier, Virgin Galactic. By the name, I think you can guess what that's about. Here's Elisa Roth.
3, 2, 1.
The official launch of commercial space travel is scheduled for 2 years from now. But Virgin Galactic CEO Richard Branson is shooting for the stars. He's ready to order 5 more spaceships to add to his fleet, and he thinks the business is ready for liftoff. He's expecting to turn a profit by 2015. Airline analyst Richard Abulafia says it could happen.
I think it's possible that in a few years you'll meet people at very elite cocktail parties who say, "Space? You've never been?" or something like that.
With a caveat.
But of course, they'll only have been for a few moments and not nearly at the altitudes that astronauts experience.
Abulafia says the financial success of the Virgin Enterprise will depend a lot on government subsidy of the upfront costs. In a video on the Virgin Galactic website, Branson promises the experience will knock would-be Armstrongs off their feet.
We're designing our spacecraft so that each of our passengers will have the room and the freedom to enjoy the amazing sensation of weightlessness.
The least you could expect for a $200,000 ticket. How about some free peanuts? In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
In Japan, the hand can be used like a knife.
But this method doesn't work with a tomato. That's why we use the Ginsu.
And wait, there's more. A lawmaker in Rhode Island wants to name a street after the Ginsu knife. After all, Ginsu was the marketing genius of two Rhode Islanders back in 1978. Ginsu is not a Japanese word. They made it up. But those infomercials have changed TV ads forever. They were the first to take credit card orders, for example. The Ginsu is still around, although the ads have stopped running.
You get the Ginsu knife, the matching carving fork, the versatile 6-in-1 kitchen tool, a set of 6 steak knives, and the spiral slicer. You get them all for only $9.95.
This is the Morning Report for Thursday, February 21st on Marketplace.org. You've probably heard horror stories about people being kidnapped and waking up to find one of their kidneys has been removed. The Cato Institute in Washington says there's a way to snuff out the black market for kidneys. Legalize the sale of human organs. Cato makes its case at a forum today. Here's Nancy Marshall Genzer.
Diabetes is on the rise. The disease eventually destroys kidneys. Waiting lists for scarce kidney transplants are growing. Cato's Zigrid Fry Revere says legal kidney sales would solve the problem. Donors can live on just one kidney. Fry Revere says the selling process would be tightly regulated.
The government can decide. You need to have informed consent.
But some bioethicists argue that poor donors would be taken advantage of. Instead, they favor a system called presumed consent, After you die, your organs would be harvested automatically unless you'd specified otherwise. But Fry Revere says we shouldn't have to give away a valuable body part that will eventually be sold.
And then the companies that transform it into usable medical material make a killing.
The President's Council on Bioethics is now studying the ethical issues involved in the organ shortage. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
These days, financial experts look at trees as a hedge against inflation. As trees grow, so does their value. Now this country's biggest public pension fund is investing more than $2 billion in forest projects. The California Public Employee Retirement System, or CalPERS, has adopted what environmentalists are calling a trend-setting policy. Sarah Gardner explains from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk.
Under CalPERS' new policy, any forest investments it makes will eventually have to be certified sustainable by an independent third party. That means managed in a way that will ensure the forest's long-term survival, among other things. Lewis Bloomberg at the Nature Conservancy says CalPERS' decision may inspire not only other pension funds, but the timber industry as well.
I do think this will create another incentive for more landowners to adopt independent certification.
CalPERS and others see forests as increasingly valuable. Since forests store carbon dioxide, owners can sell carbon credits. Joanna Durbin at Conservation International says landowners are evaluating their options in light of the rapidly growing carbon market.
Managing them for their carbon value is an important part of the equation, in addition to or above and beyond their timber value.
CalPERS has been on the forefront of other green investment policies, including pressuring public companies to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Today's your last chance to bid for the world's largest music collection. It was listed on eBay this week with a starting bid of $3 million. The winner gets 300,000 CDs and 3 million records. Remember records? If you thought the days of vinyl were over, guess again. Here's Brendan Noonan.
Don McGinnis is an optimist. Who else would buy a record manufacturing plant in 1992, 10 years after the compact disc sparked a digital music revolution? A CD, after all,
was cheaper to replicate, much cheaper to ship because of the size and weight factor, and it's so much more convenient for operating. The vinyl industry was dying.
Still, McGinnis couldn't resist buying the plant when his boss decided to retire. Now business at Record Tech in Camarillo, California, is booming. Machines melt down vinyl pellets and pour the hot liquid onto a waiting mold. Then the presses clamp shut, oozing vinyl out the sides, and finally, a record slides onto a long spool. Vinyl makes up a minuscule part of the music market, just 0.2%. Compact disc sales make up most of the rest, but hundreds of thousands of people still buy records, and that number is growing. According to Nielsen SoundScan, new vinyl sales were up 15% last year. So why the renewed interest? Well, you can't hear it on the radio, but record enthusiasts claim that vinyl offers a warmer, more nuanced sound. Think fresh-squeezed orange juice versus store-bought. Jason Moore, the chief vinyl buyer for Amoeba Records in Hollywood, cites another reason for the resurgence.
It's always been more personal, so much more tangible than a CD. The size, the look, you know, gatefold, you get to watch it go around. You know what I mean? Interactive?
People like displaying their records, and even flipping them over, things you can't do as well with a CD or an MP3. Now, more and more people download MP3s for their iPods and then buy vinyl for their home collection. And these aren't just nostalgic boomers. Jason Moore again.
Everybody's out there buying records these days. This 15-year-old kid's out on the floor with Fleetwood Mac Rumors and, you know, Led Zeppelin in their arm. You know, it's like gives me hope and humanity.
For Don McGinnis, it means hope for his business.
I don't know how long 17 or 20% growth is going to last, but I have a 10-year-old son. He's much more into music than I am. And if he wanted to, 15, 20 years from now, be involved in this business, I think the business would be here.
In Camarillo, California, I'm Brendan Noonan for Marketplace.
Yesterday, Stanford University announced a huge boost in financial aid for students from middle-class families. Most families making under 100 grand will be able to send their kids to Stanford for free. But what this does is eliminate the need for student loans, which, just like home loans, have ballooned. Let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, what's your take on this idea?
So what they're doing is they're saying to the low-income and low-middle-income families, you know what? You're not going to have to borrow. It's going to be a combination of grants and work-study programs. And this is spreading throughout the private college system. And it's been dismissed, Scott, you know, by people saying, well, it's these really wealthy universities. Mm-hmm. They can afford to do this. And, well, that's true. But I think they're in a vanguard of a movement where just what you're talking about, college has gotten too expensive. The debt burdens have gotten way too much. And so, therefore, colleges are under increased pressure to lower their cost to low and middle income families.
But can public universities afford to do that?
Well, this is where you believe in the benefits of competition, and we'll have to see. Now, a lot of public universities are going to go through a very difficult time because take a look what's happening state and local government finances. We're in a recession or we're heading into recession. But I do believe that in the economy as it's evolving, most state governments recognize that they need to be competitive with their university systems. So, yes, they will step up to the plate, but it's going to take time. The private universities are going to move faster simply because they can, and they'll dip into their endowments. But you're going to see the public universities increase their efforts to raise their endowments, which they've been doing already. Plus, I think the states are going to simply have to step up to the plate and be more competitive going forward.
Well, let's get down to the bottom line here. Parents and students are filling out the financial aid forms right now. What do you tell them?
The option they have right now is there is the government student loans. That's what you want to borrow. You really want to get those Stafford loans if you can. You want to steer clear as long as possible from the private student loan market. There are a lot of abuses in that market, high interest rates, high fees, and I would be very concerned. You may have to do that, but I would limit what you do in that private student loan market, which is where all the lenders want you to borrow from because it's more profitable to them, which means the better deal for you, get those government student loans.
All right, Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.